Hello, and welcome to the start of a remarkable story. In fact, the word remarkable is hardly adequate. It's almost impossible to reach for a description to describe the scale of the information that you're going to see and hear. Imagine, for instance, that despite what we're led to believe, there is no such thing as a random accident, a random incident, a random anything, that everything happens because it is meant to happen. On a spiritual level, how we create our own reality and what we blame other people for, we're actually creating. And in the second part of this video, we're going to look in detail at how that happens, because now, as the veil lifts in the last few years of the 20th century and we move into the 21st, we're now scientifically being able to confirm that these things are true. And then there's another level of what you're going to hear, which I'm going to really start with. And that's another version of there's no such thing as a random accident or a random incident. It's a story that revealed that not just now, not just in the modern world, but back thousands and thousands of years, a tiny, tiny few people, indeed interbreeding genetic bloodlines, have controlled, entered the positions of power and have orchestrated what we call history. So that wherever you look, increasingly as we've created the technology to become a global society, increasingly this tiny little clique, the tribe or the brotherhood as I call them, have been able to orchestrate the major events and therefore the direction of the world on a global scale and a scale that beggars belief. What I've already said is staggering to the perception of life that most people have, that we're encouraged to have, that we are programmed to have. And I feel a bit like the cow who walks in the field, and you've got the herd of cows in the field there, and they're munching away, and their reality is that every now and again, the big truck comes, and it takes a few of them away, and wherever they think they go, I don't know, another field, on holiday, whatever. And then this other cow comes into the field and says, hey, you got to listen, or you won't believe what I've just found out. You know when they put those cows and some of us in that truck and they take us away every now and again, they're not taking us to another field or on vacation. What they do is they take you down to this big building and they slit their throats and they bleed them dry and then they cut them up and they hang them on hooks and then they put them in little packages and put it in the supermarket, and then them humans come along and buy us and eat us. What would be the reaction of the rest of the herd on hearing this information? You're crazy, man. You're out of your brain. You want to go and see a psychiatrist? They'd never do that. This is ridiculous. And anyway, I've got shares in that trucking company and I get a good return. Shut up. You're making waves. And yet, all the things that I have just said are absolutely true. It's just that the herd will not believe them. And what's happening now as we unfold across the millennium and beyond and the perception of life dramatically changes, what in the past would have been considered ridiculous, extreme, and nonsense is increasingly, through documented evidence, not from some theory, being confirmed as true. A very, very few people run this planet and control your life, and yet you have the power to control your life. You just give it away. And that's the point. When I talk about a few people running the world, understandably, people come back and they say, well, it's not possible, mate. Can't be done. Too many people. And it can't be done by physical means, by soldiers at the door and soldiers in the street. You can do that in a small area, but you cannot control billions of people physically, just like you can't control a herd of sheep or a herd of pigs physically if they don't want to be controlled. In England, a little while ago, we had a remarkable example of that, in the sense that two pigs actually escaped from a slaughterhouse. They were just about to go through all that stuff I've just been talking about, and they got away. What they said was, instead of just following the herd and just accepting that that's what you do, they thought for themselves, they expressed their uniqueness, they broke out of the herd, and they ran away. And this became a major national news story day after day after day, because all these different people and agencies were dispatched to catch the two pigs, and they couldn't catch them for days and days and days because they were trying to catch them physically. And because those pigs expressed their uniqueness, far from going to the slaughterhouse, they became national celebrities and are now wheeled out at galas and fetes and other events as one of the star attractions. Shows what you can do when you express your uniqueness instead of following the herd. The point I'm making here, however, is that you can't control lots of people physically, but you don't have to. What you do is you manipulate the way they think and the way they feel so they behave in the way you want them to. Mind and emotional manipulation, summed up and symbolized by this. We are multidimensional infinity. We're not just a physical body. As we'll come to in the second of these two videos, we are everything that exists. But how much of everything that exists, the eternal consciousness, are we accessing? Infinity or just a fraction? And the difference between that infinity perception of life and possibility and that is simply, again, beyond words to describe. So the idea has been, over thousands of years of this manipulation, to turn unique aspects of infinity into a tiny, tiny eggshell of consciousness with a tiny, tiny perception of its own potential to control its own destiny. And once you do that, you create the herd mentality. And the herd mentality can be summed up by what we see all the time in a herd or a flock, whatever you want to call it, of sheep. If you look at how sheep are controlled all over the planet every day, it's through this. It's because sheep are put in that symbolic eggshell so that they don't think for themselves. They just follow the one in front. So most of the sheep every day, and I've seen it, remarkable sight it is, where the farmer arrives with the sheepdog, and there's this whole kind of group of sheep, hundreds of them in the example that I saw once in England. And they're all munching away and no problem. And then suddenly, when the farmer arrives, one or two of them start to walk. Just one or two. Ba, 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 ba. And it's like flipping Exodus. Hundreds of them just follow the one in front without thinking. No? Well, do I want to follow the one in front? You know, what do I feel today? Maybe I want to go over there. No, ba, 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 ba. And then you've got the tiny few who don't immediately succumb to that and follow that and concede their uniqueness to that. And they're given the extra dose of fear by the sheepdog. Rout, rout, rout. Oh, all right then. And that four-letter word, fear, is what controls the world. Fear, fear, the manipulation of fear. So what you have are two states of being that get hundreds of sheep exactly where the farmer and the sheepdog want every day. And those two states of being are ba, 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 and fear, which gets the few to do the same. Staggeringly, we may find watching a group of sheep like that, funny. Oh, come on, Ethel, come and look at these sheep. They're so stupid. And yet, the human herd, because that's what we've become, has outsheeped the sheep. Because we have actually dispensed with the sheepdog. We police each other. It has become a crime to be different. Anyone who's different from the norm gets ridicule or condemnation. Instead of expressing and welcoming and encouraging and glorying in the unique contributions we all have to make, we condemn them or ridicule them. Now, this is not just naval contemplating. It is fundamental to how a few have controlled the world for literally thousands of years. And unless we break this, they'll go on doing it. What it means is that all you have to do to control the direction of the world and control literally billions of people is to set the norms in society. What is considered right and wrong, moral or immoral, sane or insane, possible or impossible. And once you set those norms by controlling the education system, crikey, education system, crikey, what a word. Someone said Gandhi was asked what he thought of Western civilization, and he said, I think it would be a very good idea. What do I think of education? I think it would be a very good idea, but think about time we had some. So through controlling the education system, the mantra messages through the media, confirming that these norms are how life is, the vast majority of people in the human herd, from cradle to grave, occupy those norms and live their lives within them because they think that's reality. Now, that's fine. That's a choice. I don't have a problem with that. But we seem to find it so hard to make those choices and let other people make different choices. So the reason the few can control the world as they do and have for so long is not just that vast numbers of people live within the norms. It's that those people insist those people that want to live outside the norms conform as well. So the key state of being, which is the foundation of all that I'm talking about, is the one you'll find in the vast, overwhelming majority, all but a handful, literally, of human beings. It's the fear of what other people think of them. Once you're in that mode, and that's the eggshell, then you're in trouble. Because suddenly you're not living your life, you're not expressing your uniqueness, you're living someone else's version of what you should be. You're already in prison, you're in what I call the hassle-free zone of norms, you've conceded what you are to what someone says you should be. And if enough people do that, and we do, whoever sets the norms runs the world. And what happens then, of course, is that when you're on the edge of that hassle-free zone and you're thinking, shall I, shan't I express my uniqueness? Shall I go with what my heart's telling me? What is the fear at that point that is making us resist? Oh, should I, shouldn't I? We're not at that point thinking, what will the President of the United States think if I express my uniqueness? What will the Pope think? Although some people will do that. My goodness me, why, I don't know, but they do. Or what will the Governor of the Bank of England or the head of the Federal Reserve think? No, no. What's making us resist expressing our uniqueness is our fear of what our mother will think. Oh my God, what will my mother say? What will the guys down the bar say or the people at work? In other words, the people's reaction that keeps us in those norms are the people who are already in there. So the sheep have also become the sheepdog. The policed have also become the police. The inmates of the prison are also the prison warders. Now this combination, I repeat because it is so important, this combination means that whoever sets the norms in society runs the world. If, and the big, big if we concede our uniqueness to it and insist that everyone else does the same. And then when the norms are set, different aspects of the herd are played off against each other. So religions have been created, and we'll get into that because it's remarkable how the religions which fight each other and conflict with each other actually come down to the same people. Same story too when you look into it. So they play different aspects of the herd off against each other. Religion is played off against religion. Political party is played against political party. Economic theory against economic theory. And so we've set the norms that have created the herd, and then the herd is set at war with itself. And while we're cussing each other and fighting each other and blaming each other, the few people are string pulling all these different elements and creating the key element that's necessary for the few to control the many, divide and rule. So when I'm going through this story, I'm not kind of getting into, and I don't want to get into, it's them. What I'm talking about here is because of us. Without us, none of this stuff will be possible, which is great news because we can uncreate it in the period we're going through now. Just say one other thing before I move on about this. You know, most of the things, most of the belief systems, because that's what it is, belief, that are played off against each other, that conflict with each other and fight with each other, they're actually just the same state of being with a different name. I wonder what the difference is between, say, a Christian family that insists that their children believe what they believe and a Jewish family that insists their children believe what they believe. What's the difference? It's just that they believe slightly different things, and they are slightly, but they're still indoctrinating their children into a belief instead of saying, you have all the information available and we encourage it, and whatever you come up with, whatever you make of that information, I'm at peace with because you're unique and I'm not going to tell you what to think. So if we want to be free, we have to start by setting ourselves free and setting other people free, not least our children, to be who they really are and not what we'd like them to be. And what I call these opposites that are not opposites. I call them opposames. And it's amazing when you look around the different groups that are fighting and conflicting, when you look at the core of what they're saying and they believe and their actions and their ways of acting, you're not looking at opposites at all. You're looking at the same state of mind with a different dress on. I'll give you a quick example. During the last war, the World War, Second World War, the far, 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 far left, as symbolized by Joseph Stalin, communism, was played off against the opposite, the far, 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 far right, symbolized by Adolf Hitler, the Nazis. Now, they had to be opposites because we're told they are. That's the left, that's the right. Wow, let's have a look at them. Let's just check this one out. The far, 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 far left, as symbolized by Joseph Stalin, was into centralized control, military dictatorship, and concentration camps. Now, the far, 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 far right must have been very different because they're opposites. I read it somewhere. The far, far right are into centralized control, military dictatorship, and concentration camps. And they were played off against each other. They're not opposites, they're opposames. One thing I think we need to remember all the time, opposites never fight. They never take part in wars because the opposite of a state of mind that believes that war is an option and conflict is an option and violence is an option is the state of mind that says it's never an option because violence and war and conflict never solve anything. That never fights that because that doesn't want to know. What fights wars? Two aspects of the same state of being. So the elements of society that create the divide and rule are not even different states of mind. They're the same state of mind with a slightly different name. Now, going on from this imprisoning of the consciousness in what I call the eggshell goes something else very important. But this is the structure that has allowed this control by the few of the many to go on throughout this period I'm talking about. Because if you're going to hold people in that eggshell of perception and thought and possibility, you have to keep from them vast amounts of information that would set them free. Set them free to understand that the world is being controlled in the first place, and also set them free from their own sense of limitation. So throughout this period of time, the same structure can be seen, and it can be symbolized, as you see here, by a pyramid. You've got a tiny, tiny few people at the top of the pyramid who hoard the really advanced knowledge, the knowledge that would set us free if we had access to it. And the rest of the pyramid is fiercely compartmentalized. So the further you come down into the mass of the people, the less that knowledge is in circulation, until you reach the point where it's hardly in circulation at all. And this structure of knowledge in the hands of the few and the masses kept in ignorance is one that goes on again and again and again. And without it, frankly, this manipulation simply couldn't happen, and the world would not be as it currently is and has been for thousands of years. And the nature of some of this information, years ago, as we'll come to as we tell the chronological story in a second, maps of the world existed, which, for instance, the ancients knew that the American continent was there. The idea that Christopher Columbus was the first European to discover the American continent, I mean, it's just ludicrous. I've just seen a pig fly across here for a start. I mean, it's just crazy on basic evidence. And if you had maps of the world and the mass of the people didn't know they existed, that again gives you a significant knowledge which most people don't have. But now we're in the, what you might call the modern world. We're in a situation where fantastic technology exists outside the public arena, which we don't know about. And if we did, it would be a very different world. A little while ago, when I started to get a bit of a profile in this information, I was invited to a meeting with a guy in America who works for the CIA as a scientist against his will. And he told me of the amazing technology that has not just been available more recently, it's been available for decades. Technology that would create abundant growth in deserts without water, end of famine in Ethiopia and other places in the world. That would give us all the power and warmth we need in our homes, in our businesses, in our factories, without using polluting fossil fuels and these other sources which are doing such damage to the planet. Technology which could cure cancer and so-called incurable diseases exists now. Why don't we have it? Because it would set us free. It would give us choice. And choice equals freedom. Lack of choice equals the opposite of freedom, the imprisoning eggshell that I'm talking about. So it's kept from us. And I asked this guy, just to give you an idea of what's going on the other side of the movie screen that's projected at us via the media and education and what we laughingly call that. I said to him the obvious question, if you don't like doing all this, why do you work for the CIA against your will? And he opened his shirt and he said, this is why. And it was a kind of a bizarre moment because on one area of the room, there was his children and his family. And yet I was looking at this father from this bizarre perspective of the world he lives in when he goes out the door in the morning. On his chest was a see-through sachet, or patch as they call them in the trade. And in it was this golden liquid, which turns out to be a drug. And he went into work one day, because just because you work for the CIA or the FBI doesn't mean you want to control the world and unfold all this stuff I'm going to come to. Most people think they're serving their country. Why? Because they're down here in the pyramid.